The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
If you're in downtown Alpharetta, go see my friends Travis and Andy at Tringa. They're located in City Center, and if you're going anywhere for spring break, summer break, or fall break, go see the sister restaurant Tringa at Grayton Beach across from the world-famous Red Bar.
This is the Ben Burnett Show, the only show in America that features a one-term has-been retired politician that nobody knows.
Welcome into the Ben Burnett Show. My name is Ben Burnett. My guest today is Fulton County School Superintendent Dr. Mike Looney. Mike, welcome.
Well, thank you, Ben. I honestly feel a little bit confused. I thought we were having lunch today. I didn't know I was doing this. I'm just kidding.
You did not. The man knows of what he speaks, and he was lying to you. Mike, I want to ask you, I think school administration is something that most people know nothing about, but you are mentioned in the news relatively frequently. Can you talk about what the role of a superintendent is?
Well, I am the chief executive officer for Fulton County Schools, aka superintendent. And so a superintendent functions in the role of a CEO. I report to our governing board, which is elected by the taxpayers of Fulton County. And I am charged with implementing their governance strategy through policy.
Let me ask you a question. We're gonna get started. So it's interesting to talk to somebody when they get to the CEO role, and clearly you love kids, or you wouldn't be doing what you do. How was growing up for you? Where did you grow up? What were you interested in? I know you spent time in the Marine Corps. We can talk about that because that's something a lot of people don't know.
Well, it's funny that you asked that because yesterday I had a full circle moment. I spent some time at Barres Correctional Institution yesterday speaking with juveniles. And I think what's unique about my background and what's the perspective I bring is I actually was a runaway as a kid and spent some time in juvenile hall and on the streets, you know, trying to get by, trying to survive. And so when I think about my service as a Marine and then my subsequent service as an educator, they are more similar than different in this respect. And that is, they are service industries, and it's about serving others for the betterment of our community and our country.
Where did you grow up?
Well, my father was career Army.
So everywhere.
So a little bit everywhere, but I will say that I ended up at Fort Benning, Georgia, Columbus, Georgia, and that's where I spent what high school experience I had. That's where I spent it.
And then you were blessed enough to attend the University of Alabama.
I was extremely blessed to get into the University of Alabama, where I got my doctorate and my education specialist. I actually got my master's and my bachelor of science degree from Jacksonville.
Can you tell me a little bit about kind of the did you go to college first, or did you go to the Marine Corps after high school?
I didn't finish high school. I got my GED as a runaway. And as soon as I was eligible to join the Marine Corps, I did. So I joined the Marine Corps at 18, went straight to boot camp.
Paris Island.
Was lucky enough to be assigned an MOS, a military occupational specialty of combat engineer, which in simple terms means you get to blow things up and build things. None of which is applicable as a superintendent of schools.
Well, it's funny. I think there's a lot of interesting things. As you get out and you start moving into higher education, what would you tell your average, if there's somebody, and there are very few that are between the ages of 14 and 18, most people that I know send their kids straight to school, right?
Right.
Higher education. Do you have any sort of predisposition to, hey, look, if you're not ready to go to college, because candidly, I'll tell you on the other end of it, like I was 18 and I was probably like, I could have honestly gone and done 2 to 4 years in the military and been a way better steward of resources to go in, you know, into higher education.
Yeah, certainly. I think every child, every young person is at a different level of maturity and in a different place in their lives. And I think for those people that have a calling to serve in the military, one of the branches of the military, that's certainly an appropriate path. I will tell you, I loved every single day of it. Even the bad, even what people would think is bad days, I loved. And perhaps it's my perspective, or for those people that, you know, simply don't have a clear path forward. Where else can you go to stay in shape, get in shape, have life experiences, travel the world,
learn,
and serve your country and learn, and other than in the military? So it was a great experience. I would have stayed as a, I would have been a lifer. I unfortunately got injured in the Marine Corps and subsequently retired, but I truly loved every single day of it.
When you decide that education is something that you were passionate about, did you have any sort of introspective based on your upbringing? It was like, you know what, I think I want to spend my life here because I've spent so much of it running from it.
Well, you know, for me, it was, once again, I was drawn to serving. I actually worked in private industry for a while and didn't find that fulfilling and wanted to find a way back into serving. So I had a principal friend of mine that suggested while I was working on my MBA to become a substitute teacher. And as soon as I got into the classroom and began interacting with students and tried to bring real life experiences into the classroom, I was instantly hooked. You know, a lot of our students struggle with why is school important? Why am I learning Algebra 1? Why am I learning this? And one of our challenges today in this very intense world where students can get distracted with technology and that sort of thing very easily is how do you bring relevance in the classroom? How do you show them why geometry is important and why reading is important in science and social studies? So I just love that. I loved making schooling, an experience rather than, as I had experiences in school, more traditional setting, you know, columns and rows and the teacher's talking and we're supposed to be listening and taking notes. I don't think that's the best vision of education.
How long were you, after you're a substitute teacher, when you move into that more of in a full-time capacity, how long did you teach before you decided to go an administrative route?
4 years. Taught in the classroom for 4 years, became an assistant principal, and honestly just worked my way up through the ranks, principal to central office supervisor, assistant superintendent, all the way up. And
did you have to move around a lot to get those opportunities, or were most of them relative to where you were living?
I've worked in a total of 3 states in my 25-ish year career.
Alabama,
Tennessee, and Georgia.
What was your the day you get the call to take an assistant superintendent role? What were you doing at the time, and how did you know that that was the direction that you wanted to lean into?
You know, interestingly enough, I think in all but one, perhaps I was recruited from other districts. So
that's better than chasing it.
It is. I was working as a central office supervisor where in the district where I had been a principal, been promoted to central office supervisor. And we had done some amazing things in teaching students to read, particularly our students that have come from poverty.
Where were you living at the time?
Calhoun County and Alabama, Anniston, Oxford area. And I received a call from the board of Montgomery Public Schools in Montgomery, Alabama, based on some work I had done around reading and had been recognized by the White House, et cetera. And they asked me to come down and impact their reading scores, and they offered me the position, and I moved my family down to Montgomery, Alabama,
of
all places.
Is that not one of the most unique places in the country?
I think Montgomery, Alabama is, first of all, it's a beautiful place, but I think it's stuck in time.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's like nothing has changed.
It is and it's not, because you're 100% right. And in the public school system, which I can tell where you were drawn to, especially with kids that don't have all the resources to be successful, a lot of people of means send their children to private schools in Montgomery. I know this because Mike went to Alabama, I went to Samford. We're two relatively Alabama-y people, but it's a city that I pull for because it is stuck in time, and you know that the people don't necessarily want to be stuck in time. It's like they can't help it, because on one hand, you deal with those issues, and on the other hand, they have 2 Air Force bases where they develop the F-35. It's a strange place.
It is. I think of it kind of like Columbus in that it's a sprawling town. You know, it's not like Atlanta where you have lots of high rises and that sort of thing. It's not a real compact town. So it's very sprawling, spread out. And quite frankly, all the growth is happening north and east of the city of Montgomery towards Auburn and towards Wetumpka and that sort of thing. And, you know, it's just a very unique place. But I learned so much there. And I learned to work in an urban setting, in an urban environment with students that, you know, are in survival mode.
And I can tell you and I've known you for a while.
Right.
But I did not know about how difficult your upbringing was. And so much more makes sense to me now about why you would be strategically positioned. And I know from there you probably have a move or two and you wind up in Williamson County outside of Nashville, which is definitely not Montgomery. But it's and it's a very interesting place. Talk to me about, like, as we skip ahead, talk to me about coming to Fulton County and what was so attractive about it. And then I could talk to you all day about sitting on as the superintendent of Fulton County Schools.
Yeah, I did a stint as a superintendent in Alabama and then was recruited to Williamson County, which is a very affluent district.
I think it's
the sixth most fluent community in the country. And obviously a lot of musicians and people in the industry and professional sports and the health headquarters of the east part of the United States anyways. And did that for about 10 years, right at 10 years. And the headhunter for Fulton County Schools contacted me and said they had gone through a search and it was unsuccessful and they were starting over and had expressed some interest in you know, me applying. And so we talked a couple times and I had instantly gelled with the board. They were focused. They're seven strong women, very intelligent, had served on the board for a long time. And their tag, the motto of the district was where students come first. And I was just immediately attracted at the thought of working for an organization where students truly did come first, because sometimes we adults get in the way. and we don't put students first, but I was intrigued by that. And I love the diversity, the beautiful diversity that we have in Fulton County. We have, you know, the best of everything. We have some urban environments. We have some affluent environments. And it's truly a melting pot here.
When you look at the challenges that you have, because for those of you who don't know, the Fulton County school system has a region in the South County, and then it largely stops because the city of Atlanta has its own school system. And then it picks up somewhere around Sandy Springs and comes all the way to Forsyth and Gwinnett and Cherokee.
That's right. We're the only bifurcated school district in the country. So we're actually split in half, essentially, north and south. And we have Atlanta Public Schools, which sets, you know, that separates the north and south versions of us. And those are very different communities and very different challenges in both of them.
I don't know that they have the challenges everywhere that you face, but to me, that would be part of what is interesting about what you do, because there are so many facets about, and I live in Alpharetta, but there are so many facets about what you have to do and how do you manage the needs of the northern part of the county and the southern part of the county differently?
Well, first we put students first, and so it's, you know, it's easy to make decisions when you contemplate what's best for students. And we have a very strong, smart, experienced school board that they understand their communities and they lean in very heavy as it relates to what we should be doing from a policy and governance standpoint so that we can do what's best for students regardless of where they live and what community they come from and regardless of what kind of homes they live in.
When you get into about, was it 2 years into your first, I would say term, but contract, there was a global pandemic that took place. 2 years, 3 years?
You're being kind. It was actually just about 6 months.
It was 6 months, 6 months into your job, you wind up in a global pandemic that I'm pretty sure if you saw it coming and didn't say anything to anybody else, then shame on you. But how did that, what needs came to the forefront during what was a very difficult situation for everybody, but nobody, in my opinion, besides people that were let go and sent into unemployment all in the span of, 30 days, I would say that the greatest impact on this country is probably with children from that period of, in Fulton County, there were places that, were out of school for just a little bit. There were places that were out of school for a really long time, and the impacts of that are different. And I feel like you kind of threaded the needle in the right way, knowing that you have different political ramifications with a certain subset of sect of people and different from a second. But how did you evaluate quickly the needs and what you needed to do to allow children to be successful? And what would you take with you if it were to ever happen again?
Well, I will say this. First of all, our community was not shy about sharing their views on how to best handle COVID. We're not a shy community. Honestly, I'm very grateful and thankful to the board that allowed me to be the CEO and make those tough decisions independent of politics. So to the extent that we could, that I could, certainly did not allow politics to drive our decision making. We try to use data. We try to use the latest information, and we tried to think about our students first and then all of our employees, because our employees were significantly impacted as well. And it would have been impossible for us to.
And that's not just teachers.
No, we have almost 14,000 employees in Fulton County Schools, ranging from police officers to lunchroom workers, custodians, accountants, you name it, we have it. And so those individuals, those team members, were going through the same experiences that we all went through. And, they had challenges at home and sick parents and sick children. And so we tried to find a way to your point, to thread the needle, to meet our students and families and employees where they were, but to keep the main thing. And that is, we know that students needed to continue learning. And I was absolutely convinced, and the data supports this, that our students that come from the most challenging environments would lose the most ground.
Absolutely.
The good news is I think that this past year we've managed to make up some of that lost ground. And I'm excited about the upcoming school year, where we can hopefully, finish off some of the making up the lost learning opportunities that our students have experienced over the last couple of years.
I think one of the things I think that you also have to contend with, and I've read this in the AJC, so I don't just know it from inside sources, is that your enrollment over the coming decade is expected to decline.
Yeah, that's a really changing dynamic for Fulton County, right? We have been growing for so many years. The fact of the matter is, one, we lost a significant number, somewhere around 3,000 students during COVID. Those families have opted for homeschooling.
Yeah, let's make sure we use lost the right way. They made other choices.
That's right. They made other choices, moved away, didn't inform us or have chosen another education opportunity. And so that's one factor. And then the second factor is, the truth is that the birth rate is declining. And the people that are moving to Fulton more often than not have fewer children. And the people that have already been living in Fulton are having fewer children. And our population is aging. So we are seeing a slow and steady decline in enrollment. And that, as we project forward, that's true for the next 5 to 7 years.
One of the questions I want to ask you that's adjacent to that is, do you think that some of the escalating costs to live in Fulton County affects that? Or do you feel like that is just something politicians argue about, meaning housing affordability?
Well, certainly the affordability for everything. I don't think that's germane to Fulton County.
No, honestly. It's everywhere.
It's everywhere. Costs have gone up and people are struggling to get by. And, if you think about most Americans these days are living paycheck to paycheck. And that's true for whether you make $14,000 a year and have three children and you're a single parent, or whether you're making $150,000 a year. This is just the unfortunate reality that we're in. And so that certainly is contributing to it.
When you talk about differences in things that you see over time, the science, technology, engineering, math component to education, which has definitely come to the forefront, I think people saw the opportunity there 20 years ago, but that is something that you guys have leaned in. Can you talk about what you see with respect to that in education and how you think it's going to change from a math and science perspective focus over social emotional learning?
Yeah, we're leaning really heavily into STEM related fields, both that are college preparatory programs, but also just technical programs. You know, the majority of the workforce of the future, our understanding, is not going to require a four-year degree, but they're going to have the skills related to science and technology. And so we're leaning in heavily. We've pushed down career technical programming all the way down to sixth grade now, where students are having hands-on experiences in science, technology, engineering, mathematics that brings relevance to their classroom, kind of what I was speaking to before. But it still doesn't prevent them from, you know, pursuing a four-year education if that's their pathway. I have been one of those people that I believe that technology is an essential tool for us to use in the classroom. We all in the private sector and government sectors use it every single day as part of our toolkit, but it is not a replacement, right? So the tools that we use in our classroom should reflect what tools people use in industry, and whether it's private or government. But it's not a replacement for teachers. And so we're trying to focus on hands-on experiences in science, technology, engineering, mathematics that leads to real-world experiences in preparation.
If you had a if you had a goal for your current contract for at Fulton County Schools, what is something that you want to accomplish that you are on the front end of, or that you're thinking about doing that, you know, you kind of rattle around in your head, or you go to a conference and you learn things? What is something that you want to see implemented that you have to seek some consensus on or buy-in? And what are the issues that are, you know, upcoming to you?
Yeah, well, I can't give you one. I have to give you five.
Oh good. I thought I'd struggle to get one.
So you might think I lay awake at night and thinking about these kinds of things. I absolutely believe that bringing rigor and relevance into all of our classrooms from kindergarten, pre-kindergarten, all the way through 12th grade is absolutely imperative. You know, kids need to be challenged where they are. And the only way you're going to grow every child individually is by challenging them from where they are to where they can be. And I think we have to make sure that they and their and our parents understand that a C is okay if it's a C is the best a student can do in a challenging environment. A C in a non-challenging environment, that shouldn't be okay. But if you're being stretched, you know, then a C is okay. So that bringing rigor and relevance into the classroom. You know, based on where we are in our world today, and you'll notice that I have some green high top Chucks on today in memory of the students that lost their lives in Texas, I think we have to rethink what school safety looks like and make sure that we are doing everything that we possibly can to make sure incidents like that, what happened in Texas, don't happen here in Fulton under my watch.
Can we stop here for a second?
Sure.
Because I think, look, there are things that nobody fundamentally disagrees with. And you and I are like-minded in that. Because you and I would go chase down crazy ideas and think, well, why on earth would anybody do this? And we were like, well, why wouldn't they do this? I want to ask, it wasn't that I avoided this topic. I didn't even think to bring it up. But when you look at what has happened, and it has been since I was in high school with Columbine, I think you're 100% on the right track. Do you study it? Do you look at your infrastructure? Do you look at the personnel? Because, you know, if you talk to chiefs of police, it's hard to hire people into law enforcement today. What do you see tackling that issue? Because it is, whether it is real or whether it is manufactured, you can have your own opinion. But there is no doubt that it happens. I have three kids in the public school system, so I care. And if it is not the best dollar spent, I really don't care. Like, I want to know that they go to school and have the ability to get on the bus and come home. And I don't know that that has been neglected because I could never speak to it. But talk about your plans in seeing what has happened in Texas and how you want to care for that issue, because it is important. And it's not just Fulton County Schools. I guarantee you every superintendent thinks the worst day that you could ever have would be something a lot like that.
Absolutely. And I modestly want to say I think that we're better prepared than a lot of other places.
Yeah, but that's too bad also.
Right. That's a shame, but I think that's our reality. I also want to say this. I am absolutely committed, and I believe the board is as well, not to make our schools feel like prisons.
Yeah.
You know, we're not going to put Constantina wire up and armed guards at every single entranceway, but there are things that we're doing with structures to think smartly about how do we restrict access, limit access, control access in prudent ways. And so that relates to, you know, securing doorways and designs of buildings. But those are all things that we can do on the proactive side to, you know, reduce the harm that if a bad actor comes in. So we know that we need to do those things. We also know that most of the perpetrators of these incidents are students or former students that have been disengaged or were disengaged from the schooling experience. They gave plenty of signs that there was trouble in paradise. Yesterday, when I was meeting with some young incarcerated juveniles at the correction facility, I asked them the question, what is it that we can do as educators? What can superintendents, principals, teachers do differently to hopefully prevent, you know, students from feeling like that's the only way out? And I was not surprised by their response. They said, it's all about relationship. Make me feel like you care. Show me empathy.
Over and over and
over. Over and over and over. And so, you know, I came from a less than desirable environment. And, you know, growing up, I was made to feel as if there was something inadequate about me or something substandard about me. And if you get that at home and if you get that at school, then you start believing it. And you really are, you know, you really get to the place where you don't really care. You don't see any alternatives.
And anybody can put on the face, people are fragile. In general, you can have strong-willed individuals coming out of your upbringing and going into the Marine Corps. I mean, I know that that made you a hard dude, but you can't do the former and not question a lot of decisions. And my youngest child is adopted. I am still amazed at, and he doesn't remember any of those days as an orphan. I'm still amazed at what lives in him from an innate perspective. And some of those kids are largely like, that's the only reason I have any empathy with them, but you have it in a different way. It's good feedback. Well, if there are three more, what are they? Because you got through two and I stopped you.
Okay. So the next thing I would say is, while I'm here, I want to make sure that the taxpayers' resources that we are privileged with using are used in the most effective and efficient way possible. And, you know, we're a $1.6 billion enterprise, Fulton County Schools.
That's a big publicly traded company.
That's a large organization by anybody's standards. And so we have to be smart. You know, since I've been here with the board's leadership, we have been able to reduce the millage rate. This year will be the second out of 3 years that we've been able to do that. And so committed to making sure that we continue to be good financial stewards of the resources that the taxpayers give us.
Can you continue to do that? And I'm not asking you from a pragmatist perspective. I'm asking as a guy who knows that the country sits with 8.6% inflation, and everybody likes to say, I love lower taxes, I love lower taxes. Well, I like my kids to have a teacher as well. And I know that plenty of them, especially where I live, come from a little bit further away sometimes. How do you balance the needs of your workforce, who by no stretch of the imagination, you know, most people who work in schools are not knocking down $150,000 a year.
Yeah, well, we in Fulton, one of the things that we do is we do zero-based budgeting. And so, you know, just because we had money last year doesn't mean we're going to have money next year, nor are we going to spend it that way. So we identify what our needs are, and then we make our financial plan match what our needs are.
You tell your money where to go.
We tell our money where to go, rather than saying, here's the money, now let's find out.
What do y'all want to do?
Yeah. So we try to be smart about that. And then finally, this is something that's really important to me personally and professionally. You know, one of the focuses I've had since I've been in education is focusing on those students that want to drop out of school. And when I first came to Fulton County in the first year, we reduced that by 50%. And
what percentage of your kids that are 15, 16, is that in the school system? Like less than 10 or less than 5? Or
yeah, it's probably 6 or 7%. I don't have the exact number.
You don't have to.
But I will say.
That's a lot.
One is too many, right?
Yeah.
So if one student drops out, the likelihood of them being successful financially and not ending up in prison becomes exponentially smaller. And, you know, the truth of it is I have yet to meet a student that really wants to drop out of high school. In my career, I've developed processes where students can't just walk away from high school and say, I'm done, without going through some gauntlet, you know, of meeting different people and encouraging them and helping them find light at the end of the tunnel. So primarily there's three reasons why I have found that students want to drop out of school, and we can affect all three of those. One is life is in the way. The Mike Looney's of the world, you know, I'm being abused at home. I don't want to go home. It's not safe at home. I'm in survival mode, and I want to do anything I can
to do anything else.
And so school is secondary, of secondary importance. You know, that's Maslow's hierarchy of needs. So there's agencies and organizations and people that are willing to lean in and support those students. Case in point, I had a student in my former district that was living homeless in the Walmart parking lot. And life was in his way. He came from a tough environment. He didn't have transportation because he didn't sleep at the same place every night. Walmart was his quote-unquote home base. He would go to sleep in the Walmart bathroom or in the clothes changing room until he got kicked out. And what I learned is he didn't come to school because he didn't have a way. So I let him earn enough money to earn a bicycle, and then he had a bicycle to come to school. He came to school because he had a way. And he was motivated to come to school because he had food and friends.
And it was warm?
It was warm. And nobody was going to hurt him. So life gets in the way. That's one reason students drop out. Two, they get credit deficient. They fail a class here and there, and it kind of snowballs. It gets worse and worse. You know, if you think about algebra, it's one of my favorite topics to talk about. If you haven't, you know, developed competency in basic math, you're not going to be successful in algebra. If you don't know your multiplication facts, you're not going to be successful in basic math. And so it just kind of snowballs, and students get credit deficiency, and then they don't see a way out. You know, our students in this era lack grit, in my opinion. And, you know, it's easy for them to raise their hand and say, I quit. And many of our parents say, okay, rather than finding ways to help them stick it out. So they get credit deficient and give up hope. And the truth is we have programs that help students get caught up. Night school, you know, credit recovery programs, after school programming. We have some weekend classes. We have some computer-based classrooms. There's no reason a student can't get caught back up. And then finally, they just don't see the relevance. School, you know, we haven't done a good enough job of connecting the dots. This is why you need to learn this. This matters because of, by showing them, and instead of talking at them, talking with them. Giving them life experiences. And our entire community can do things around that. As an example, this is a wonderful studio. I have so many students in Fulton County that are interested in this kind of work, letting them, you know, come and learn about the technical aspects of the radio business and how it works. Those are real life experiences that, you know, our students could benefit from.
I hear what you're saying over there. Is there anything you want to leave us with, man? I've enjoyed talking to you because
I didn't get to my fifth one, so I'm going to do my fifth one real quick.
Well, all right, we'll cut that and put it in a minute.
Yeah, it's 1 minute. Students are not going to be successful unless they know how to read. And so we are doubling, tripling, quadrupling down. Every student in Fulton County Schools will learn to read proficiently and on grade level while I'm in my duration. Of my tenure.
Is that the most important thing you can teach a child how to do?
Fundamentally, you cannot be a contributing citizen in our country if you can't read.
Mike Looney, It is an honor to sit here and talk to you. And as luck would have it, when we put this episode out, it will be the second day of school.
Ooh, that sounds awesome. I can't wait to listen.
Hey, thanks a lot, man. I look forward to catching up with you, and I appreciate your time. It's been another episode of the Ben Burnett Show. See you next time, everybody. Thanks to my friends at Solomon Brothers. You can find them at 17th Floor Tower Place in Buckhead or at Liberty Park Village off Old Milton Parkway in Alpharetta.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
When you buy a used car, don't be taken for a ride. Get Ford Blue Advantage certified at Wade Ford, Atlanta's headquarters for factory-certified pre-owned vehicles. Go to wadeford.com. There you'll find a great selection of Ford Blue Advantage certified used cars, trucks, and SUVs. With Blue certified, nearly all makes and all models are in stock now. You'll find something perfect for just about any budget. Buy with confidence at the Wade Ford factory-certified used car outlet at wadeford.com. Wade Ford. We are Atlanta's Ford dealer.
This morning in North Carolina, wheels are spinning. Determination is winning. A passion is now a thriving business, and it shows no signs of slowing down. How? The power of a conversation. Like the one Clint Spiegel had with First Horizon Bank about starting a bike wheel manufacturing facility in Asheville. Now it's not just talk, it's rubber meets road. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Clint. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.